Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, president and founder of SMIE Consulting, and happy to be speaking with you today about three new topics in international education news over the last few days. And we'll be giving you our unique takes on these issues and how they might be able to benefit institutions down the road as you look to refine and improve your international education recruitment strategies. So what I'd like to do today is first direct you to a couple of resources that you may or may not be aware of. And in terms of SMIE Consulting, we've been around since 2014 and are focused primarily on connecting institutions with and students and international educators together in the pursuit of international education options. So my goal with SMIE Consulting is to help you better relate with your audiences and better connect with them in more effective ways as you look to navigate a very complex world of international education recruitment. And part of what I do each week as a resource and the place from which all of these stories that we cover on the Midweek Roundup are coming from is our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share, Social Media and International Education News Fit to Share. That comes out Mondays, and I've just posted the link to this week's edition of the e-newsletter. And you're welcome to subscribe to that, so you get these in your inbox Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then we use some of the stories each week, three of the stories each week from that newsletter to highlight here on the Midweek Roundup. And today we'll be doing that in just a moment as we get into the topics of the day. But I did want to share with you also, for those who aren't familiar with SMIE Consulting, check out our website at smieconsulting.org. And we have a number of free resources there, as well as an archive of the newsletters and links to the podcast providers who also use the Midweek Roundup, the audio format of this presentation. To help engage you in a different way. Should you prefer not to watch these on a weekly basis, you can certainly watch or listen while you're working out or running or whatever you may be doing. So please do check out the podcast as well, available on all your favorite podcast providers from iTunes and Google Play to Podbean and Spotify. So we're available on all those platforms and hope you're able to catch up with some of the previous episodes. So please check out that and all resources that are available on the SMIE Consulting website. Now today, what we're going to be talking about today are some topics that are always ever present on my mind as I talk about the issues of international education and what institutions can be doing to really adjust their methodologies and adjust their approach towards reaching out to prospective students and their parents. Probably the first thing that most folks that are getting into international education, international student recruitment are focused on is, where are students coming from? Where are the sources of students? We all know about China. We all know about India as the top two sources of international students coming to the United States for the last few years. And we might not know much beyond that. We know there's been some, if you're new to the game, you know there's been a lot of challenges recently with regards to current administration policies regarding international and immigration issues and how that may be detracting. And certainly the numbers reflect that there is drops coming and drops that have already happened in new international student numbers. The last 2 years, open doors reports have certainly reflected that. But what I always look at for kind of a finger on the pulse of what's actually happening now is the SEVIS by the Numbers report. Now, for those not familiar, Study in the States is a site that Department of Homeland Security created specifically for students and for schools. But for students and schools, there's data on there that is particularly useful as students are going through the process. But for universities, one thing that you always want to make sure you are aware of are now what used to be quarterly and are now looks like semi-annual reports called SEVIS by the Numbers. And they come out This most recent edition just came out last week. It's from March 2019, but it was just released last week. And I'll be posting the link to the current report. And as with many things in the federal government, it's not exactly presented in the best user-friendly format, I should say. It's a scrollable spreadsheet that you have to basically copy and paste and download and reconfigure to make it into a usable format. But it just basically puts all that information out in this kind of scrollable spreadsheet that doesn't fit on one page, obviously, as they do a breakdown for each country, as well as each and where these students go from each country and the different categories, male, female, what level of study they're in, and then what state that they are studying in. So that that report has revealed in the most recent edition that international student numbers from the last two reporting periods, from August of 2018 to March of 2019, international student numbers have dropped 2.7%. That's an overall numbers and certainly reflects what we knew was coming. And certainly the differences between, it's important to clarify here, the difference between the DHS numbers and the Open Doors numbers are, Open Doors basically deals with post-secondary education plus intensive English programs. Jacoby, thanks for joining the chat today. Hope you're well. Good to see you this past Sunday and look forward to connecting with you again soon. Looking forward to your wedding in a few weeks too. But in terms of this report, the DHS report reflects SEVIS data, real-time data as of the reporting date, that shows the number of international students in F, M, and J categories that are currently in the United States. This SEVIS by the Numbers report doesn't break it down like Open Doors does in terms of top institutions, in terms of other kinds of categories. What it does do, it goes into a lot more detail and also covers high schools and secondary schools and also primary schools that Open Doors data certainly does not reflect. And you'll see that as you scroll through the categories on the Open Doors report. They break it down into associates, bachelor's, master's, doctorate, flight training, language training or intensive English programs, which we're looking at vocational primarily there, primary studies and high school or secondary school. So what the numbers reflect is in August 2018, there were 1,201,000 and change international students in the U.S. The March numbers reflect is that number is down to 1,169,000 and change. So there are real-time numbers that are showing the drops. And so the Open Doors numbers will likely reflect that kind of a decrease as well. Again, what's not included there are approximately 57,000 students that are of primary or enrolled in primary or secondary schools. Now, interestingly, in these categories, in the changes from August to March, you do see increases, slight increases in associates of only 100 or so, increases of about 4,000 in bachelor's degree students, decreases in the number of master's degree students of about 30,000 drop in master's degree students, and a drop of about 6,000 in doctoral level students. Flight training, language training are about the same, a little bit of a drop in language training, continuing an ongoing trend we've seen. And then looking at the August to March numbers again, you see significant drops in vocational as well in terms of where those students are. In terms of the two areas that perhaps are showing the most surprising growth, an increase of about 700, which is probably about 15% growth in primary students coming from overseas, and then also a growth of over 10,000 students in high school students coming to the United States, international students coming to the United States for high school, I should say. So that's an increase of almost 25% there in high school students coming to the U.S. So that's the glimmers of hope that those high school students will eventually continue on for undergraduate degrees. And again, those numbers, primary and high school, would not be in the Open Doors numbers come this fall. But overall, that you will see a drop off in the fall numbers from Open Doors. What we will, what we don't know is what the fall numbers will be for Cvis by the numbers. That will account for the intake coming this fall term for international students. So we'll see what happens, but certainly this Cvis by the numbers report is not promising. There are going to be small glimmers of hope. Maybe the high school numbers will be something to hang your head on for at least domestic recruitment of international students is certainly a growth area there. But we see, in terms of countries that you may be looking at and have been looking at for a number of years, Vietnam is probably on your list. They did register some growth, about 700 growth in bachelor's degree students and also 700 students growth in high school students. So there's a good chance that there will be possibilities for those markets, high school markets, Vietnamese students, will be two potential growth areas. There are more areas that I haven't had a chance to digest all of them. It's a lot of number crunching that you have to go through to look at these numbers. But certainly there's a lot of lot to process there, a lot of food for thought as you look at these reports. But we've talked in some of these cases, like in Vietnam, we talked last week about how in Canada now, Vietnamese students are the number five source of international students, actually supplanting the United States. We mentioned that this past week. So the Vietnamese student growth is certainly strong, not just in the United States, but also increased much more so north of the border. So always good to keep an eye on where the numbers are trending, and this Cvis by the Numbers report unfortunately didn't come out with much fanfare. A lot of people just realized it as they do random searches of what was happening with DHS, and looking forward to seeing where that goes in the months to come. Probably next August is when we'll see the next report. Now, moving on to the second topic. Social media is something that, for those of you who know me, has been an important part of how I view international education, one of the more important lenses through which I view international education, particularly international student recruitment. And for obvious reasons, that students that institutions are looking to recruit are very much living on social media, living on their mobile phones, and mobile social media is an important piece of that equation. And how institutions communicate with those students and on mobile devices, on social media, is a part of the international student recruitment process that fairly few institutions are doing exceptionally well, because of the breadth and the depth and the complexity of relationships that you must maintain, and now increasingly the individual relationships you must maintain rather than just using large broadcast tools like Facebook or YouTube to reach mass audiences. You're now having to have much more detailed conversations with individuals, individual students and parents through social media and other messaging apps. So there's a company now that has come out with a product actually launched in 2016. It's a British company called TAP, the Access Platform, which from this Pi News article I've just posted the link to, is what they say, social media is the key to reaching prospective students, according to this company, the Access Platform, which also helps institutions utilize existing students to work as ambassadors. So a concept that is not new, certainly in international student recruitment. Any successful plan that is comprehensive in how to engage your prospective student audiences must involve your current students in some way, shape, or form. Oftentimes, this may be a struggle at institutions that don't have large international populations or don't have on-campus jobs to provide for those students. So this platform, again, a British company that's come up with this, started in 2016, and is now boasting 24% user-to-applicant conversion through its platform. So in addition, the users, student users that are on the TAP platform, the Access platform, say that 74% are more likely to apply to an institution after an interaction through the platform's chat feature. And the chat feature basically enables universities to have their current students serve as on-demand chat guests, I guess, or chat hosts for prospective students. So this, again, chat is not a new concept with current students. That's been around for several years. And certainly in organizations like College Week Live have made that a very successful part of their platform, now Platform Q Education. Having worked with them, certainly know the capabilities of what that is and what that means, and certainly something I believe in very strongly, that the more opportunities you get for your current students to interact with prospective students, the better chances are that you'll enroll those students. This data from this company, TAP, again, it's I'm not promoting TAP in any way because I don't know the platform, but certainly the concepts that this platform is using to and show results and show ROI for institutions is a very valid one. That having chats with your students and prospective students is a way to help improve your application conversion for prospective students that are engaging with your website or through this platform. What their data is also showing through this company, but through UCAS Media in the UK, 83% of applicants want to see content created by current students, while 80% of applicants choose their university based on word-of-mouth information. Again, what they're hearing about the institution from others, colleagues, friends, family, whatever it might be. So I think it's not necessarily what this company is doing differently, but the fact that more institutions should be utilizing this as part of their outreach strategy, where those conversations happen, whether it's on a third-party platform like the Access platform or College Week Live, or through your own institutional sites, having the chat functionality where you have regular students or staff, at least staff, but preferably students on hand to engage with your prospective student audiences, that's really how you can improve your conversion, improve your, whether it's at the beginning of the process where you're trying to encourage applicants or prospective students to apply, or whether it's later on in the process after they're admitted, they're wanting to talk to students in their major perhaps. These are conversations that will help them understand what it's going to be like for them to be a student on your campus. And ultimately, that's what we all seek to present to our prospective student audiences, is how can these students really see themselves on our campuses? How do we paint that picture for them? Are we doing it just through videos that we have on YouTube? Do we do it through student blogs? Do we do it through live chats that we have, through email correspondence that's a student specific to country to country, major to major? However you can do it, the more layers you build in and more pieces of the puzzle you can create for a prospective student as to what their life would be like, the better a chance you have of convincing that student that you're the right place for them, if there's a good fit, obviously. So that's something that I really think is an essential piece that is missing from many institutions' student recruitment strategies. So I always encourage colleagues that I talk to that are asking for advice on how do I improve my conversion in terms of my ROI for at the applicant stage or the admitted to deposited or deposited to enrolled stage. It's all about how engaging are you? How much are you continuing conversations that you've had, not just sending random emails at a set time every year once they've achieved certain stages in the funnel, you send them messages, but how segmented are those messages? How are you able to really personalize your messaging to those students, particularly those institutions that can do that through their utilizing current students? They're the ones that are going to be certainly making head and shoulders difference in terms of improvement over what you've been doing. So I think for many institutions, this strategy is one that philosophically they can all get on board with, but the implementation of a strategy is really, really where I think a lot of institutions do fall down in terms of how they are able to process all the levels of communication they need to have, having the resources in place to have those conversations, if not through staff, but through students. That's the rub where a lot of institutions will fail. And one that it doesn't come easy and certainly requires a lot of oversight, a lot of engagement on a regular basis and supervision to make sure those conversations are happening, and certainly training of staff or students that are going to be engaging in these kind of things is vital to the success of this kind of a program, of an engagement program for prospective students, particularly international students. Now, those are the two first topics. The third topic is one that I had gotten senses that in Canada, we've talked before on this podcast, on this roundup, how Canadian institutions have really benefited in the past 2 to 3 years with the rhetoric of the political rhetoric here that's anti-immigration and anti-international, and what that the impact that's had compared to what the Prime Minister in Canada presents for his country in terms of a welcoming attitude, meeting refugees at the airport personally, and having just policies in place that are much more open to international students and international visitors. For many provinces in Canada, outside of Quebec, Ontario, and British Columbia, maybe Alberta as well can be thrown into that mix, majority of provinces in Canada have significant population, domestic population deficits, where they are basically have declining local populations that aren't populating schools and then colleges. So a lot of institutions are struggling budgetarily, or had been struggling budgetarily, to keep the doors open, to keep the size where they had it. And what we see now, interesting article out of Canada from CBC in Canada that profiles Atlantic universities, basically Canadian provinces on the Atlantic coast, and how they have grown their international population significantly over the last few years. And the article focuses on how those institutions have seen significant increases in international students. I've just posted the link in the comments section. But this looks at a variety of Atlantic universities, looking at Dalhousie, University of Prince Edward Island, University of New Brunswick, Memorial University, St. Mary's University, and a couple of others. Cape Breton University is the one that really stands out in terms of how they have grown their international student population. The article is on how these universities have basically spent big on recruiters in their scramble for foreign students. And as we talked about in the past, in general, Canada has a much more favorable immigration policy towards international students and visitors, those who want to come to Canada to work after they're done with their studies, and those who want to come work directly. There's a much smoother and more streamlined process there, whereas in the U.S. it's clearly not, where there are a lot of these provinces that are struggling demographically for population that will actually create very, very easy pathways to citizenship for students, that they know up front that, hey, if you come here and you want to work afterwards, and you do X, Y, and Z, you're gonna have Canadian citizenship in a certain number of years. So that's something that is very clear in the Canadian process. And in these provinces here, particularly in the Atlantic provinces, you see some very significant growth. Now, the article talks about the money that is spent on agents by universities and colleges in these Atlantic provinces to bring in international students, but also showing the net revenue significantly more revenue that they have than they actually spend on agent fees. For example, Cape Breton University, a university I've not heard a lot about, but they have, in 1 year, they went from spending $514,000 Canadian dollars on agent fees to $1.1 million on agent fees. So more than doubled in a year. What did that mean in terms of student numbers? They went, I think the numbers were, if I'm looking at the right numbers, they increased the number of international students quite significantly as well. Now, what that means is, and at CBU, Canada, Cape Breton University, international students now make up over half of the total institutional population for students. So that's obviously a direct result of how much they're spending in agent fees. but the revenue that they brought in has been a revenue lift, according to the Vice President of Finance and Operations there at Cape Breton. Their revenue lift of $7 million for the school. So they spent 1.1, they see a revenue of $7 million. So obviously a significant increase in revenue for the institution. So what does that mean for other institutions? There's others like Dalhousie who are now jumped from 252,000 to over 628,000 Canadian dollars on agent fees this past year. It's had a significant impact on their bottom line that they reported at Dalhousie a $3.8 million increase in tuition revenue, largely as a result of increased international student enrollment. So there are challenges, and people are accusing these institutions of balancing its budgets on the backs of international students by hiking their fees. And there are some knock-on effects. Obviously, Cape Breton University, there are foreign students that have struggled to find work on campus or in the community, and some students even reported turning to food banks just to be able to eat. So some growing pains that these institutions are having as they've attempted to increase their bottom lines and their institutions. So it's very a method that these institutions have been using quite a bit, and Canadian institutions have done that fairly frequently to grow their populations. But that's not the only way they do it. But certainly for these provinces that have been maybe not top of the line destinations in Canada, they're not Toronto, they're not Vancouver, or Quebec. They are having to be more creative and think outside the box. But oftentimes, when this growth is allowed to happen really unchecked or unrestrained, you now run into issues as some are happening at CBU. But also, this has been seen in other institutions in Ontario, in British Columbia, where the percentages of international students are growing 30, 40, even 50%, and the impact that's having on the institutions as a whole. So certainly something to keep your eyes on as that story develops compared to what's happening here in the United States. But always worth knowing what your competition is doing. And certainly that's one of the principles now in this global age that we're in for international student mobility, that if a university refuses to recognize that they're not just competing against their competitors within the United States for students, they're competing globally. That's how you position your institution and your marketing messaging outside of the United States to your key audiences without taking into consideration what other countries are doing is a short-sighted policy, frankly, and one that if institutions don't address in their future marketing, they're putting themselves at a competitive disadvantage. So as we move forward, we'll be covering more of these kinds of topics in depth and invite you all to certainly check out the resources at smieconsulting.org and any of the past episodes from the podcast and the midweek roundup are certainly going to be available to you and might be helpful if you're looking for food for thought on these key issues. And then again, please do subscribe to the SMIE Consulting e-newsletter. All the SMIE news fit to share, and we'll get that out to you Mondays in your inbox first thing in the morning. So thanks again for joining us this week, and we look forward to connecting with you in the months and weeks to come. Cheers.